This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Happy New Year. 2021 is here, and this month marks 10 months since the COVID pandemic arrived in the United States. That's enough time for the first babies conceived during lockdown to be welcomed to the world. But early predictions of a baby boom appear to have fallen short, and now some health officials are expecting a baby bust. Regardless, the new babies arriving now are entering a world of economic devastation and mass loss of life. So let's talk about it now with Ohio State University Department of Sociology professor and director of graduate studies, Dr. Sarah Hayford. Dr. Hayford, welcome to our program.
Thanks so much, Michael.
And Wellesley College, Catherine Coleman and A. Barton Hepburn, professor of economics, Dr. Philip Levine. Dr. Levine, welcome to Cincinnati Edition.
Glad to be here.
So let's start with this article I read in Hawaii News Now. It was posted on Friday and reads in part, quote, "Because of safety protocols like social distancing, people going out less, and many facing financial hardship because of the pandemic, national experts say there's been a significant drop in both planned and unplanned pregnancies. Using data from the 1918 Spanish flu and the Great Depression, the Washington, D.C. think tank, the Brookings Institute, is projecting around 300,000 fewer births in the U.S. this year." Dr. Levine, does that appear to be the case?
Well, so we don't actually know the data. We don't actually have data on pregnancies. We're forecasting what's going to happen to births, which obviously results from those pregnancies. So in some sense, our knowledge of what actually did happen during that during this past 9 or 10 month window is something that will show up over the next 9 or 10 months. But in terms of the idea, that's exactly right. I mean, the forecast that we're making is that based on our current circumstances, we're expecting to find fewer births come in the next year or so.
And you were involved in this Brookings Institute research. What can you tell us about how this data is gathered?
Well, so, you know, what we did in our analysis was to, think about the two main features of the world in which we now live. The first is, one of which is a significant economic recession. The data show that women tend to have fewer babies during recessions. I think there was a reasonable expectation why that might occur. When times are tough financially, the ability to bring a child into the world and feed it and take care of it is more difficult. We use data from the Great Recession, a little over a decade ago. And in the states in which unemployment was much worse, births fell by more. And we use that relationship partly to forecast what's going to happen going forward. The second thing that we do is we use data from the 1918 pandemic, which is our last major public health crisis of this magnitude. And it's rather startling when you look at the data from that period that, exactly 9 months after massive spikes in death rates, due to the pandemic, birth rates fell. There's other reasons to think that births may be affected, but based on those two, that's how we got our estimate.
What can you tell us about what you've learned, in terms of similarities and differences of these pandemics, the one that happened around 1918 and the one happening now as it relates to this?
Yeah, I think, I think we could make a pretty compelling argument that we would expect the current pandemic to have bigger effects on fertility than 100 years ago. I mean, our ability or women's ability to control their fertility 100 years ago wasn't so good. And so to the extent that there's a desire to change fertility patterns, it's much easier now than it was then. In terms of the labor market impacts, I think that, the labor market, a decade ago wasn't all that much different than it is today.
That's Dr. Philip Levine of Wellesley College. We're also joined by Sarah Hayford, Dr. Sarah Hayford from the Ohio State University Department of Sociology. And Dr. Hayford, we just heard Dr. Levine talk about the economic impact of family planning. This is an area that you study as well. And when planning a family, household finances and the economy likely play a significant role. Can you tell us how economic demographics play a role in creating our national birth rate?
Yeah, so I think it's complicated to think about economics and birth rates because, of course, children are very expensive, but of course, children also provide a lot of benefits and provide a lot of joy to their parents. And so how prospective parents think about balancing the economic costs of children with the other kinds of benefits that they get from having children. You know, it's not a one-to-one balance. And so in particular during the pandemic, you know, we might think about the, you know, the health crisis, the economic crisis, but we also might think about people looking for new sources of meaning. And having children is one way that people create meaning in their life and sort of create positive sources of meaning in their life. So I think there's lots of reasons to expect that birth rates might fall during the pandemic, but there may be some counterbalancing impacts as well.
So we've talked a little bit about comparing this pandemic to the previous one 100 years ago. When we look at an event a little closer in history, the Great Recession of a decade ago, what did you learn from studying that period and its impact on birth rates?
Well, as Dr. Levine pointed out, the birth rates fell during the Great Recession. And one of the surprising things for researchers was that we would have expected, once the recession was over, that birth rates would rise, that birth rates would go back to the level they had been at before the Great Recession. And that didn't really happen in the United States. And researchers are still trying to figure out why that might be. One reason is that we know the economic recovery from the recession has been very uneven, that we still have a very unequal economy. There's a lot of precarious jobs, a lot of economic instability. And so people may not feel like the recession is over, even though in economic terms, maybe the Great Recession has been over. Another possibility is that people are sort of delaying births, that they'll sort of eventually catch up to the births they didn't have during the Great Recession. But the longer the time goes on since the Great Recession, the less that delaying explanation seems like a feasible explanation.
Dr. Levine, let's talk a little bit about that. Was delaying pregnancy, delaying family planning, was that already occurring prior to the pandemic?
Sure, there definitely are. You know, it's evident in the data that women are having babies a little bit later than they had been in the past. And I agree with this notion that, you know, in some sense, the real mystery in all of this is what's been going on over, you know, in the last 7 or 8 years, not the period before that. You know, during the recession, it made perfect sense that birth rates were falling. Why they've continued to fall since then is definitely sort of a bigger mystery that, you know, that's a question we really don't know the answer to. Well, lots of hypotheses, but no great evidence. You know, in terms of what we can look forward to from our current situation, you know, there's plenty of reasons to believe that, you know, it's possible that to the extent that women delay births, you know, for 6 months or a year because of our current world environment, it's possible that, you know, 6 months or a year after that, we'll be right back to where we started from. And then in some sense, it's just a relatively speaking minor blip and won't really have any large impacts on society. I think there's probably reasons to think that that's not going to be the case, that this will be a longer lasting effect. You know, I think that our public health crisis seems to be, you know, extending in length far beyond what people would have liked it to have been. But, you know, just, and when we do, you know, flip the magic switch to get everybody vaccinated, you know, labor market conditions don't respond instantly. Like, just because the vaccine is ubiquitous doesn't mean, and everyone's vaccinated, doesn't mean that the labor market's going to get better the next day. Recessions linger for a long time, even as the economy recovers. As Sarah was saying, there's still people who suffer for lengthy periods of time. Even if you're able to get a job, the new job may not be as good as the old job. And for a lot of reasons, I think there's reasons to expect that the impact on fertility will not just be a one-year phenomenon, that this is going to be ongoing for quite some time.
And you're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. We're joined today by Ohio State University Department of Sociology Professor and Director of Graduate Studies, Dr. Sarah Hayford, as well as Wellesley College, Catherine Komen and A. Barton Hepburn, Professor of Economics, Dr. Philip Levine. You can join our conversation if you'd like at 513-419-7100 or email your comments or questions to talk at WVXU.org. So we're talking about baby boom or baby bust in the biological sense and a little bit of the economic sense. But in this pandemic and the technology that's available, we're seeing the way that child rearing has adjusted. We're seeing a lot of parents become not just at-home workers, but at-home teachers as well. I'm wondering, Dr. Hayford, if we can anticipate any impact on family planning because of the stress that's been brought on by these extra responsibilities that were not anticipated when one has children.
I think we can absolutely anticipate some effects. And I think thinking about this issue points out one of the really challenging things about thinking about the impact of the pandemic on birth rates, which is it's really hard to know how long the current crisis will last and what's going to happen after the current crisis. Is everybody going to go back to school? Is everybody going to go back to work? As Phil points out, these things take some time. So one of the things we know about the recession caused by the COVID pandemic is that women have been disproportionately affected. Women are taking on a lot of the responsibility with children home from school. Women are more likely to have lost their jobs. So that makes families much more economically unstable. But it also might mean that if women are home already, they might see fewer costs to having another child in the short term. But I think it's really hard to predict both for individual families and for economists and demographers and sociologists who study society as a whole. It's really hard to predict how those things will play out in individual families. And I think that one thing that people do when they can't predict what's going to happen in the future is they delay having children. So I think that we're going to see that short-term decline in birth rates as people delay having children and possible catch up as people see what's happening and see how things evolve.
And Dr. Levine, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. In terms of having a baby, uncertainty is not a good thing. And we live in a world where there is just tremendous amounts of uncertainty about pretty much everything. It's going to be quite some time before, people's situations resolve to a point where they're feeling good about their current position. The other thing I would say is that, you know, we in our report, we specifically state that, you know, we base our the numeric forecasts are based on sort of the recession and the unemployment rate changes, and on the 1918 pandemic. But we're also very clear to state that these issues about school closings, childcare availability, all of those sorts of things clearly matter. Certainly for women who already have a child and are thinking about having a second, these are major life issues for them right now. It's a lot more difficult to quantify how large that effect would be, but it certainly is there.
I want to talk again about the flu pandemic from 100 years ago. We've talked about how birth rates declined during that period as well. Dr. Levine, and I think you may have touched on this earlier, but how long after that subsided did we start to see birth rates return to what had been a normal rate for that period?
So what was interesting about it, and this is getting back to this notion of whether these changes are permanent or temporary, is that, you know, birth rates, not very long after the pandemic ended, birth rates, first of all, a couple things. You have to remember, 1918 was not a recession. We were fighting a war. And war, despite the fact that pandemics might be bad for the economy, wars are good for the economy. So on net, like if you have to, build weapons, you're not slowing that down because there's a public health crisis. The economy was not so much affected back then. So what you see in terms of birth outcomes, birth patterns, is that birth rates responded relatively quickly after the end of the pandemic to go back to their earlier level. They didn't go past the earlier level. In some sense, if you see women choosing, well, I'm not going to have a baby next year, I'll have it next year. This year, I'll have it next year. Next year, you'd see a lot of births because the women who ordinarily would have had it next year plus the ones who delayed would have their children next year. That's not what we saw. So in the 1918 pandemic, you saw birth rates return to what otherwise would have happened, which means that most of those births that didn't happen during the pandemic just went away. They're more permanent in nature.
Dr. Hayford, I'm wondering if there might be some general concerns about being in hospitals. Obviously, most births in America take place in a hospital. And in many parts of the country right now, we're seeing major stress on those facilities due to the coronavirus. So we've been warned about hospital access since the beginning of this thing. Do you think there are general health concerns that you might be aware of related to that, people's possible fear of going into a healthcare facility and knowing that a pregnancy would ultimately land them there?
Well, certainly I've heard anecdotal reports that women who were pregnant already during the pandemic are more likely to give birth outside of hospital facilities. They're looking more into midwives. They're looking more into home births. They're looking into the kinds of facilities that are less likely to be overwhelmed by the health demands of the pandemic. And whether that means people would avoid getting pregnant altogether because of their fear of giving birth in a medical setting, certainly that might play into people's decision-making. It's hard to know how big an impact that might have on people's decision-making.
513-419-7100 is the number to call to join our conversation. We'll go to the phone lines now. We have Rick on the line. Hi, Rick. What's your question or comment?
My question is, what I've read about the 1918 pandemic was it had a much higher death rate among the people of childbearing age against this pandemic. And I would think that would really depress the birth rate because of the effects of that particular pandemic that would be different from this one. I didn't know if there's a way to compare and contrast those kinds of effects.
Rick, thank you for the call. I'll hang up and turn it over to our panel. Dr. Levine, Rick raises an interesting point that the flu pandemic may have impacted younger people, whereas the COVID pandemic is certainly, in terms of death, impacting the older population. Can you help us understand the relationship there to birth rates?
Yeah, certainly that played a role, but relatively speaking, a very small role. I mean, if you think about the millions of women of childbearing age at a particular moment in time, and you're talking about, even as dramatic as 500,000 deaths are, it was 650,000 or something during the pandemic in 1918. What fraction of them, even though it was disproportionately younger people, back then, the number of them who would be, didn't have the baby because they didn't survive, would play a small role, but not anything resembling what we see in the data. So it's a relevant point, but it doesn't really explain. It's not enough in magnitude to explain much of what happened.
So in America, we're projecting around 300,000 fewer births based on the reporting produced at the Brookings Institute. I read in the BBC in an article published just before Christmas on an expected baby boom in the Philippines. I want to read part of it. They write about a woman named Rovalee Zabala, who had 7 children before she learned about family planning. But quote, this latest addition was a surprise, conceived during one of the world's strictest lockdowns, which saw soldiers patrolling the streets and armored personnel carriers, police checkpoints restricting movement, and only one family member allowed out to shop for food supplies. The lockdown also meant hundreds of thousands of women have been unable to access birth control, resulting in tales of unplanned pregnancies like Rovalee's being repeated across the country. The article goes on to say, quote, indeed, it is estimated an extra 214,000 unplanned babies will be born in the next year, according to projections by the University of the Philippines Population Institute, the United Nations Population Fund. Dr. Hayford, what does that tell you about the economic and social demographics internationally and maybe even here in this country about what's happened over the past several months and what may be to come in the months ahead?
Yeah, I also saw that article on the BBC about unintended births in the Philippines. And I think that's an important thing to remember, that we've been talking about people's plans for having children and people wanting to have children and assuming that they're able to control whether they have children if they don't want them. But of course, we also have to think about people's ability to manage their reproduction. And we know it's been much more challenging, as you were just saying, for people to access medical care. And so that may mean for some people that they have a harder time getting birth control. It may mean that people who experience an unintended pregnancy are having a harder time getting an abortion during the pandemic. We don't have data yet on how much harder it's been to get birth control, how much harder it's been to get an abortion, how much that might affect the birth rate. But certainly that's also something that we should be taking into account as we're thinking about what's going to be the impact of the pandemic.
Do you know whether, Dr. Hayford, there are parts of our country that might experience similar circumstances to a country like the Philippines? I know that access to abortion, for example, and possibly even birth control can vary place to place here in our country.
Well, certainly right here in Ohio, it's very difficult to access an abortion in a lot of parts of the state. And early in the pandemic, there was some question. Non-essential surgeries were limited in Ohio, and there was some question about whether abortion was an essential surgery or not. And that there was some uncertainty about whether clinics would be able to operate that may have affected people's ability to access care. So yes, certainly in the United States, right here in the United States, there are a lot of people have difficulty accessing, especially affordable birth control and affordable abortion.
In an article in USA Today just last month, Dr. Levine, your Brookings Institute report was also cited, projecting around 300,000 fewer births. They also cited Google Trends showing significant decreases in sex and pregnancy-related searches, and a report from Modern Fertility that also found about 30% of people with ovaries are changing their family plans, with most deciding to delay conception. What is the anticipated long-term impact of this? Not just the pandemic, of course, but of having fewer babies born in our country.
You know, I think it's important to respond to your question, to put that into context with, again, what's been going on for the last, decade or so. You know, if you think about, a few hundred thousand fewer births this year, let's say, it's 300 million people who live in the country. It's not that much, so to speak. But if you start adding that up to the already smaller cohorts on the order of like 500,000, births have declined by roughly 500,000 per year anyway, over the past decade. So now, you're starting to have, cohort sizes that are close, perhaps a million smaller every year. Like, now you're talking about real changes in the composition of the country. I mean, basically, if you think about it, this is moving, when the baby boom, which had obviously extremely dramatic impacts on society, both in terms of the economy and socially and in whatever dimension, in the late 40s through the early 60s, when that ended, basically births fell off by about a million per year. That's kind of where we seem to be headed now. And again, that can have very important, smaller cohorts are important for basically the Social Security system is funded through current workers paying the current benefits for current retirees. Fewer workers makes it more difficult to fund those fewer retirees. Whether you have, six elementary schools in your district or three elementary schools in your district, like that could matter. College, basically all the way through the life cycle, a smaller cohort matters.
Are there any advantages to this, Dr. Levine?
I mean, it's probably good for getting into college.
I guess from a competitive standpoint, it does reduce the other applicants.
There's issues about sort of crowding in schools, and smaller class sizes are better than bigger class sizes. But that also has to come along with, funding for schools has to go along with that, because you can just cut the funding too. I think really what certainly in terms of once you get to the labor market, fewer workers is a smaller economy. It's as simple as that. And the Social Security implications. But in sort of society more broadly, I think it's clear that it will have an impact. Knowing exactly what that impact will be is a very difficult thing to project.
And Dr. Hayford, what will you be looking for in your research based on what we're learning now as you plan for the future of where you'll be looking?
Well, I think one of the things that has really been brought home during the pandemic is how little social support there is for raising children. We don't have paid parental leave. We don't have universal childcare. Not all jobs have paid sick leave. And I think that if we thought that we wanted to have more children in the United States, one way to do that might be to increase the level of social support for people who are raising children. And so I'll be really interested to see what happens in terms of policy and how families respond to those policy changes as they're thinking about having children.
Ohio State University Department of Sociology Professor and Director of Graduate Studies, Dr. Sarah Hayford, and Wellesley College, Catherine Komen and A. Barton Hepburn, Professor of Economics, Dr. Philip Levine. Thank you both so much for the time you gave us today. We really appreciate it.
Sure.
Sure, thanks so much, Michael.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Our assistant producer is Nick Swartzel. Our technical director is Josh Elstro. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks. We'll talk again tomorrow.